Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you today, all over Lake B family, wherever you are, as we have continued to make our Lenten journey. So much of what our time has called for is what I like to think of as a deepening of our relationship with not only each other in new ways, but with the text, with the Word of God. And so today joining us is Pat Thompson. Everyone knows Pat Thompson. And Miguel Escobar, and I'm Tally Hairston, and it's just good to be with you all, Pat and Miguel, to conversate around Luke 15. Luke 15, you all remember Luke 15, that beautiful text that has the prodigal son story, the lost coin story. There are several stories in here that we're going to talk about today. And we're just going to do what we do, right? We're just going to have a conversation. We'd love for you to join us in the chat box. If you don't mind, go ahead and join the conversation. And so much of what I love about this format, even though I'd rather be in person, is it gives us a chance to see each other's comments and thoughts as we're dialoguing together. So let's take advantage of it while we have it, right? So Pat, Miguel, Luke 15. This text starts with this really short intro, right? Jesus is hanging out with tax collectors and sinners. And every story in Luke 15 comes off of that intro. Okay. Luke 15 has this kind of running start, I like to call it, right? Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and scribes were grumbling and saying, this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. Right? That's the beginning of Luke 15. And then you get the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the prodigal son. You get all of that wealth out of that intro. Who wants to start us out? What does that mean for you that we're drawn into these stories by that opening?
Yeah, I think this is the first time I've like resonated with a Pharisee in a while, you know? Because it's easy for me to be like, okay, like thinking about myself as like the people who Jesus shouldn't have been hanging out with. That's one thing. But I think if I think about who the tax collectors represented and how they abuse their power and use it against the people, it does kind of even bother me a little bit that Jesus is spending time with tax collectors. Yeah, and I was just thinking about like contemporary versions of that and what that would look like. It's a tough one.
Who is it? Who is the contemporary version of the tax collector?
Yeah, I mean, like, it depends. I think if the tax collectors are people who in some way benefit from the status quo where Jewish people are being oppressed, I mean, the contemporary version of that is, I mean, there's a lot of things there's a lot of people we can name. I think about, you know, I work in a coffee shop and I meet a lot of, and it's awkward because I don't always know what they do for a living, you know, but there's a customer comes in and I just talk to him and I'm like chatting them up and we're like having a good time, it's whatever. And then I find out I'm like, so what are you doing in South Park? You're like, you new here? And they're like, oh, I'm one of the developers. Mm-hmm. And there are these huge houses going up that none of the people who are in the neighborhood can afford. And they're, you know what I mean? And so now I'm like, and then it's so difficult for me to just continue the conversation that, you know?
Yeah.
And if I saw Jesus sitting with a group of these developers, you know, who don't know anything about the neighborhood, like, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
That's tough.
Right. That totally, that one, that's tough too. Everyone should put in the chat who they think tax collectors are. No, seriously, like who for you would be that person where you're sitting with power of people who are exploitive, and not just tax collectors and sinners.
Yeah, I think when I read like sinner, I'm way more comfortable with, it's funny, I'm way more comfortable with that. I'm like, it almost read to me like if it were reversed, I would have read it like Jesus was sitting with sinners, or like whatever, speaking to sinners, but he was also speaking to tax collectors. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I would have read it. Like for some reason, maybe just having grown up in a church, like I know Jesus sat with sinners. Mm-hmm. But translating now what tax collectors represent, mm-hmm. you know, that's the difficult one. And it's also interesting that they're named, right? Like there's not other sinners named.
Right.
No other sinners given, like their professions are left out of it.
Right.
But it's the tax collectors that get named.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking earlier that the status of the sheep that was lost and the status of the coin that was lost, it is on the shepherd or the owner of the coin to find it, right? And so, I don't know, maybe Jesus is reminding the Pharisees that he's, you know, dude, I'm out here working. What are you doing? You know, I'm just, you know, that he's, not that he ever felt like he had to justify himself to anybody, but that, you know, clearly they needed help sort of seeing what he was doing. And, you know, these are the stories that he chose to reveal, you know, what he was about, what his kingdom was about.
Pat, you hit upon who was lost in this story and who do we relate to as lost in this story? Not that this has to do with us, obviously, but the one thing that does come to mind is that Jesus is willing to be with those that are lost.
Yeah, I think in every section, there's the lost one and there's hope for the lost one, right? You will be found. There's a plan, you know? Someone is searching for you. And then there's the others, you know? And I think Jesus is trying to paint this picture, you know, of like, there are these two categories. And I think it's interesting, Jesus doesn't really like explicitly say, you know, and this is why I think it's beautiful that Jesus responds with stories, you know? There's so much more room, so much more potential with the story. When you're the lost one, there's hope. But I think, yeah, still for when you're not the lost one, there is this challenge. And I think in different ways, we are the lost one and we're the not lost one, you know. The clearest example is probably the brother who didn't leave, right? The son who stayed. Mm-hmm. That's difficult. And it's really not, though. That's what's so funny about it. Like, he's fine, right? He's good. His inheritance is not in question, as far as we know. He's probably had plenty of celebrations. You know, he's invited to the feast. He's good.
Sure.
But there's still something difficult there, you know? And I think it's that question, you know, the one about, like, or, like, the challenge about Jesus, the question, like, why would Jesus sit with tax collectors and sinners? Like, that's difficult.
Wow.
And it doesn't have to be, right? It just points, it actually just brings me back into the story. Like, I'm a sinner.
Right.
I'm such a sinner. I don't want the tax collectors to be found. That's how much of a sinner I am.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I wonder. It makes me think about when he's telling the story, he's making a point to say there were 99 that weren't lost, and then there was one that lost his way, and then the woman had 10 coins and lost one. And so if he makes that point, you think, is somebody thinking, well, what are you tripping about? You got 99. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you got enough money. What's one coin, right? And so is there also a statement about, no, we're not, this isn't about one being lost from, and there's 99 left. This is, one is lost and it's not complete. We're not complete until we're all here, right? It's kind of like, I'm working on this puzzle right now, a 1500 piece puzzle. And I'm starting to be scared that there's two edge pieces missing because I can't, they're not. And I'm just already like discouraged because if I get this whole thing together and there's a piece missing, I'm not going to be happy, right? And so, you know, is this also a statement about God saying, yeah, you know, all of you, all of us together, that's when I'm whole. That's when we're all whole, is when it's not 100 sheep. It's one family of sheep. And if one's gone, we're not complete.
Mm-hmm. The problem with our current experience is that our system is set up to leave the nine, to keep the one out, right, because it makes the 99 more valuable.
Right.
Our goal is to, in our system, is to overvalue the coin that we have, so as to benefit ourselves and the system that we're a part of, and to diminish the one that's remaining, right? This kind of thing that it's out there and it's lost, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so while the majority of folks are doing fine in an economic system, while the majority of folks are doing fine their experience with the pandemic, or the majority of folks are doing fine with you put the social issue in there, the heart of Jesus says it's only the mind of the sinner that would then go, but we're fine, right? It's Jesus's heart that says this brokenness is actually what I came to heal. So I'm going to go get the one, and I'm going to go get the one sheep, and I'm going to go get the one coin. Right. And I'm going to go get the one lost son. And when you have a problem with it, this is why I love the prodigal son story.
Right.
Because when they come back and they're throwing the party for the lost son, and the one son has a problem with it, the moral of the story is deal with it.
Right.
Deal with it. Right. So, right, you need to have the heart of the Father in that, right? Current conversations in religion are an exclusive community.
Right.
And then expect that exclusive community, not eating with the sinner, but being exclusive, excluding the sinner.
Right.
Even if you think they're a sinner, this text, my goodness, I told you I'm putting myself in trouble.
Yep.
This text says, at a minimum, it starts with the introduction saying, you got to be with the sinner. You can't exclude the sinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really is like, whoever you think the sinner is, right? And I think that's where I'm feeling challenged today, is that normally it's, I'm good. We talk about the sinner, I'm like, I know who the sinner is. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, yeah, that's easy for me. But then they say tax collector. Mm-hmm. And that's rough. That's where I just can't get past it. And this is why I keep thinking about Jonah. Mm. You know, wanting to watch Nineveh burn down, you know, not wanting Nineveh to get that second chance. I really unfortunately resonate with that.
How did they know to include the tax collector in that sentence? Like, how did they know that we were going to be here having trouble with, you know, the current day? How did they know? They could have just, you're right, they could have just said sinners and we'd have been like, you know, yeah, it's cool. But you throw a sinner in that. I mean, you throw a tax collector in that. How did they know that would just like,
Right. So there is a point where Luke is trying to counterbalance Jesus as that which causes scribes and Pharisees to interact with who they are proximate with that they don't like. So there's the story of the Samaritans and the story of the tax collector and the story of the Syrophoenician woman. The writer's intentional, trying to show Jesus as both countercultural and yet redemptive. See, it's one thing to be countercultural just to be countercultural, but it's another thing to be countercultural and redemptive.
Right.
So there's that historic context to it that undergirds all of Luke 15. In fact, Henry Nouwen, in his writings on the prodigal son, lead us actually to identify with all three characters. That the Christian story envelops all three characters: the father, the prodigal son, and the son who had a problem with the prodigal.
One thing I think is really difficult consistently is having not learned, you know, to be woke, having not learned about social justice in the church, having to bring these two worlds together, you know, for me, like my racial awakening, my identity, and like coming to know my identity took place outside the church because unfortunately it needed to, you know? And so now I'm constantly trying to weave these two narratives together. And that's a difficult process. And I think a lot of us are doing it. And it's hard to know, you know, what impulse to trust, because so much of what I think I learned as a kid in church was actually harmful to me, right? And so, and actually a lot of it was doing the work against me from outside the church, you know? Whether you call it Satan, whether you call it oppression, whatever you want to call it, the church was a part of that for me in my upbringing. So I was talking with a friend about the idea of cancellation, you know, about being canceled and whether or not that can be like a Christian thing, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I think the attempt to cancel someone is often an attempt to just like hold them accountable and to not allow them to continue to reap the benefits of their power, right? And it's actually the powerless trying to do that. And the only way we can do that is by being like, I'm not going to buy your product. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to unfollow you. All that, you know, the little things that really actually, you know, it's not justice, but it's what people have, right? So on the other hand, there's redemption and God's redemption, you know, and the fact that as Christians, we believe that everyone can be redeemed. Like Pat just said, we're not us without the one, right? Without that one sheep. So I think that's why this is so difficult for me, because there are these two conflicting narratives and bringing those together in some sort of way where, you know, you're not giving in to oppression. You're not just allowing the tax collectors to continue to abuse their power. On the other hand, you can't just say they're evil and be done with it.
So good.
So good.
That's so good.
And that I'm actually somehow tied up in each of those. You know what I mean?
So good. And
on some level, I need to be canceled.
Yes.
And on some level, the church isn't church without me.
So good.
Woo. Wow.
That is a message for today, you know?
100. Pat, what's one thing you would share?
Well, everything he just said is for real. That was good. I think what I didn't know was going to come out of our conversation that just sort of landed on me today as you were talking about proximity, Tally, mm-hmm. And how the Pharisees didn't know that, like, proximity to Jesus was not important to them because of the power that they hold. And so their own, like, personal economy sort of prohibits them from seeing their own need for Jesus, right? Meanwhile, his time with the sinners and the tax collectors, clearly, you know, there's something there where they're beginning to recognize their own need for proximity to Jesus, right? And I always think that when people, let's see if I can get this right. When people sort of complain about the social gospel, which, you know, social gospels, I remember people were complaining about that when I was in college, and I didn't really know what they were meaning when they said that. But, you know, when people complain about, you know, the gospel is about the gospel, it's not about racism, or the gospel is about the gospel, it's not about, you know, gender equality, it's not about this. But I always think I have come to believe that if the social gospel, if you don't need the social gospel, it's because you don't need Jesus, right? It's because you have a life where you're going to get to tomorrow and you're going to live your life, even if Jesus does or doesn't exist. I mean, you have a job, you have an income, you know, you don't need the food distributions at the church down the street. You don't need, you know, somebody to be helping you look after your kid because you got it. So you don't have your attitude about the social gospel is because you don't really need Jesus. When the families that we know, their economy, their home economy has now includes the church. You know, they can't make it unless there's somewhere that they can, you know, get a hold of a food distribution, or, you know, they need help, you know, help childcare for a couple hours a day so that they can, so that their home economy works. And because of their need, because of their need for people, their need for help translates into their need for Jesus. Right. And that's what I think is happening. When, as you talked about, you know, people who recognize their need to be close to Jesus.
Yeah.
I just so bless those families. And I hope, you know, I think I'm one of these people. I have a pretty good job. You know, I think, you know, truth be told, if tomorrow I wake up and I forget to pray all day, I'm probably going to wake up the next day, right? And so, you know, I myself need to be reminded that I need Jesus, like in my soul, in my gut, in my life, in my home. I need to be reminded that I need Jesus. Otherwise, I could be a Pharisee that's looking at the tax collectors and the sinners and thinking, what the heck is going on over there?
So. Yeah. Well, since you shared one thing you did not know was going to happen in our conversation, I'll just close us with this. As well, I didn't realize when we started this that all three stories are about value. The value of the sheep, the value of the coins, and the wealth that the father gave the value to his son. And in all three cases, the coin, the sheep, and the son are all alone. They all are alone. And in fact, poverty, if you read Jayakumar Christian, if you read any of folks who have attempted to define poverty as a lack of substantive relationships, that they those things lost value because they were disconnected from community. And in that way, Pat, those families have value because they're connected to community. I didn't see this story that way when I began, and really Jesus going to get those items or the son coming home is really about bringing them back to the place where their value is, because poverty in many ways can be defined as those without relationship. If anything, for today, as we build wealth, we become more isolated,
right,
and more alone.
Yes.
And find less community.
Yeah.
And in that way, we're impoverished and the center in the story. Wow. Well, folks, if I hope you have also had a moment in this conversation where you thought one thing and then ended up thinking about the story in a different way, right? So thanks so much for this time. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Miguel. Thank love you. To do this again. Ala, let's rerun it again. I'd love to.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
God bless everybody. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.